We are fighting a battle against Maya, and he said that we should fight Maya on favorable grounds. What is favorable for one person may not be favorable for another person. But in any case, one should not give up the fight. He was thinking about this sannyasi. Okay, he's given up his sannyas vows. He's gone to grahastha ashram. There's very heavy things said about people who do that. But Prabhupada didn't want to discourage him. So he was thinking about this in the pool, that one should fight Maya on favorable grounds and not give up this fight. So this means the grahastha ashram is a field on which we are supposed to carry on the battle against Maya. Under these certain circumstances. So the general principle for those of us who are in the Hare Krishna movement is that we are dedicating our lives to the project of self-realization. And especially one gets initiated. Initiation means a beginning. One is initiated into the process of self-realization. That's what it's about. And Prabhupada had a statement that he used to make all the time. He would say, human life is meant for self-realization. And then he would say, not sense gratification. So these are two things. And Prabhupada was very clear about something that many people who are claimed to be spiritual teachers tended to cover up. And that is that sense gratification and self-realization are antithetical to each other. They're inversely proportioned. That if you imagine, I'm going to put this microphone down for a minute.
If you imagine a pan balance with two pans on it, you know. So let's say this side is self-realization and this side is sense gratification, right? So that if self-realization goes up, sense gratification goes down. If sense gratification goes up, self-realization goes down. This is a law of nature, and I'll explain why it's a law of nature. They're inversely proportional. You'll never get a situation where they both go up. Would they be thinking that somehow you'll find that? But it's not the case. When you think that they both go up, that's called Kaitava Dharma,
cheating religion. So Prabhupada never covered this up. He was always very clear about this. Even though he may have driven away so many prospective people, because he was so clear about this. Then when people complained, you know, our philosophy is so, has such high requirements. That so many people won't take to it. And Prabhupada said, well, you know, if you're selling diamonds, you don't expect everyone will be able to afford it. That's all. So Prabhupada didn't compromise on this way. So we should all become very, very clear about this principle. If we are interested in self-realization, we want self-realization to increase, then sense gratification has to decrease. Now, I hope that all of us in the room, that's our commitment. Now, to be interested in self-realization, not just to be interested, but to be committed. Our business is actually to be committed to self-realization, that our human life is meant for self-realization. So to become a devotee means we have accepted this as our goal in life. And the one thing about this is that if we want to be successful with this goal, It has to be the number one priority. That's just a fact about it. If it's number two on our list or number three on our list, we won't make it. There can be other things on our list. But the fact of the matter is, if there are other things on our list, they have to be done in such a way that they further or foster self-realization. Then we will make it, because it's not so easy. It's not so easy. And therefore it requires a kind of single-mindedness of purpose. What's known as vyavasa atmika buddhi. You have to be one-pointed in your aim. You can't have five different things you're after, or 10 different things. This has to be one thing you're after. Then you can be successful. So even if we're in the grihastha ashram, still our aim has to be one. Now we will have concerns and duties that a brahmachari or a sannyasi won't have, or a vanaprastha won't have. That's all right. There's still a way to do it. But this commitment has to be there. This is the number one thing. It's the number one thing for me. It should be the number one thing for my spouse, the number one thing for my children, and anybody else that walks into my house, including the dog and cat, for that matter. We help them out, too. Of course, we don't really want them in the house, but if they do come in, everybody should benefit. So this single-mindedness of purpose is required, that it is the number one thing. Now, sometimes when people see devotees with this single-mindedness of purpose, people who are worldly would say, oh, you know, you're taking this to an extreme. A lot of times when young people get involved in Krishna consciousness, their parents, oh, this is like a little overbalanced. Shouldn't you be a little more balanced? Now, if that student, as I say, young person, instead of being committed to Krishna consciousness, was an extraordinary athlete, say a swimmer, and in fact of such good quality that was competing for the Olympics, then nobody would say, oh, isn't that overbalanced? You know, you're spending, 40 hours a week in the pool. Nobody would complain. They'd say, look at that dedication. Look at that. Or, you're going to, you've got a good brain for physics or chemistry. Really good brain, you're winning great scholarships, you're definitely on the fast track for the Nobel Prize, and so while everybody else is going out and having fun, you're spending late nights under the test tube. No one says, oh, isn't that a little overbalanced? No, you're praised for that dedication. You're held up as an example to everybody else. That same dedication in Krishna consciousness, people say, oh, there's something wrong, you're not a normal person. So really, the thing is that people simply do not appreciate the goal. If they appreciated the goal, then they would appreciate that single-mindedness of purpose, but they don't understand how worthwhile our aim is. And so that it's worthwhile and that it requires and is worth that dedication, that we should be convinced of. We should become convinced of that. To become convinced of that requires faith. Lord Chaitanya gave a nice definition of faith, Shraddha. He said that Shraddha means the firm conviction that if I accomplish Krishna consciousness, all other things will be automatically accomplished. Because becoming a devotee of Krishna is like pouring water on the root of the tree. All the leaves and the branches automatically become satisfied and watered, nourished. So this means actually that because Krishna, we're going to Krishna, and we're putting all our energy or so much of our energy into this one thing, Krishna consciousness, actually we will not be deprived of anything in any other sphere of life. We'll be different from that that chemist. That chemist may have won the Nobel Prize, but he has no friends. All he has is colleagues. He hasn't had time to develop friendly relations. He's a friendless person. So we may think that if I'll be in the same situation in devotional service, that if I put all of my time and effort into Krishna consciousness, what about so maybe I'll be unfulfilled somewhere else? No, one has to be convinced, actually, if you fulfill this relationship with Krishna, all other relationships will automatically be accomplished. You don't have to think or be afraid that we will lose out in any other sphere. This is called faith. If I don't have that faith, how do I get it? Well, Prabhupada says, faith is created by association with devotees. Presumably people that have more faith than we do. So one should see it. Even by understanding and hearing about Prabhupada's life, how Prabhupada staked everything on Krishna consciousness. So finally it was only his faith in the order of the spiritual master that brought him to America. He had no other assets, and everything came out so successful. He gave up everything. He came 70 years old, no youth, health was bad, no money, no institutional support. You know, he had 40 rupees. And then he couldn't convert that when he got here. Actually, he sold a set of Bhagavatams to the ship captain for $25, and that's what he had in his pocket when he landed in America. That's all he had. He was a renunciate. But you know, when he passed away, he had over $1 million in his own bank account. He had houses all over the world. Anything that a rich man could have accomplished, that was automatically there as a sort of secondary benefit. Except, of course, he wasn't the enjoyer. But he was not in any way deprived or let out of anything. He was kind of fulfilled in every respect. So one should see have that faith. So with that commitment to self-realization, if we want to be successful, it has to be number one on our list. If we have a great deal of faith, it can be the only thing on our list. But if we have other things on our list, they should just be subordinated to self-realization. They should be done in such a way that it helps, is favorable toward that number one project. So now let's look at this idea. I mean, let's find out why this is the case, that this self-realization and sense gratification are antithetical. Because it's very important to understand these things philosophically and analytically. If you look at the term self-realization, it already has a certain idea built into it. And the idea that's built into it is that we have to do something to find out who we are. I have to do something in order to realize myself. That means the self I see in the mirror, or the self that's identified on the photo ID, that's not me. What I think of as myself, you know, the Leo with a Libra moon or whatever, system I have based on the body of the mind, that's really not what I am. So the Vedic philosophy teaches us, and everyone accepts this, that we are actually the root cause of our suffering in this material world is that we do not know who we are. Vedas say, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am spirit. As such, I am Satchidananda, I am eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. Why, therefore, do I have to die? Why am I born? Why do I grow old? Why do I suffer disease? Why am I so full of anxiety? Why am I worried about what the future is going to bring? Here I am, this is me, Satchidananda. But I'm not experiencing myself as eternal and full of knowledge and full of bliss. Instead, I'm experiencing myself as temporary, subjected to all kinds of miseries, and subjected to ignorances of various sorts. So I'm not really, I don't know myself, I don't experiencing myself. So this is our problem. It's just our false identification of the self with the material body and with the mind. Both these things, the subtle body and the gross material body, are not us. They're extraneous to us. But we've identified ourselves with them. If we actually experienced ourselves as a soul, immediately all our problems come to an end. In fact, it turns out we never had any problems. They were kind of an illusion. That we never really were suffering. Prabhupada compares it like this, in the material world, we're like a person who's dreaming. And in the dream, there's a nightmare. So in the nightmare, the person is being is in a jungle and is being pursued by a voracious tiger. So it's nighttime, it's a dense jungle, your heart's beating with terror, that you can hear, you're running through this jungle, you know, the branches are knocking your face and you're tripping over roots and you can't see where you're going, and behind you, you can hear this huge beast crashing through the underbrush, and you can hear, you know, he's coming closer and closer and closer and closer and closer, and finally it's quiet because he's pounced. And then you feel those teeth sinking into the back of your neck, and you can smell that stinky rotten meat breath, and his neck is being cracked, and you scream in terror, and you wake up and you're safe in bed. There it is, there's your bed, there's the window, there's the curtains blowing gently, the moon is shining, it's peaceful, it's quiet. Were you ever in danger? Were you ever suffering? Nah, it depends on what you mean by suffering. You were always actually okay. But we had created a dream body and identified ourselves with the dream body and then suffered. So in the same way, we've got this identification with this material body, and therefore we're suffering. So what is this identification with the material body? We know this word, it's ahankara, right? The false idea of who I am. Ahankara is very deep. In the Vedic scheme of things, it's the most subtle of the material elements and therefore the most powerful. It's deeper than the mind, deeper than the buddhi. It's our false sense of self. And so you don't get rid of ahankara on the mental platform. In other words, if I say to myself, well, you know, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, and it's our belief that we're not the body, and I'm convinced it's true, I'm not the body, and I say to myself, I'm not the body, I'm not the body, I'm not the body, still my finger hurts and I freak out and I get a little cut. I'm acting all the while as though I'm the material body. I'm worried all the time, what will the future bring? I'm thinking all the time, in some way or another, that death can happen at any minute. We're always full of anxiety. We're trying to protect and defend ourselves. So this self-identification, this false identification of the self with the material body, is very deep-rooted. And that's why we need to go through a process called self-realization. And part of that process entails becoming free from sense gratification. So sense gratification is actually the act which cements us to the material body and the mind. It is sense gratification is the act which creates and increases false ego. That's why if I'm engaged in sense gratification, saying I'm not this body, it's just words. I can say it and there's no realization. The more I become free from sense gratification, the more I can actually experience myself as not this body. The more my consciousness will change. And that means, what will be the change in my consciousness that's described in the Bhagavad Gita? I'll see honor and dishonor is the same. I'll see what is materially auspicious and materially inauspicious will be the same to me. I'll be freed from the dualities. Happiness and distress, I'll look at alike. Stone and gold will see the same. I'll actually become detached. I will not be disturbed by the course of material nature because I will be aloof from it. This consciousness will change. And I can't do it. I mean, being on a transcendental position is not just being able to grit your teeth and endure pain without flinching. That's like the old Greek philosophy of Stoicism. You know, you might as well just learn how to suffer gracefully. No, a person's on the transcendental position is not suffering. Because that person has no stake in the material world. So that's because of this absence of sense gratification. Now let's look at what is sense gratification. What do we mean by this? Well, we have our senses, our active senses, and our knowledge acquiring senses. There's 10 of them in all. You can count the mind as a sense organ also. So you bring the senses into contact with the objects. And from that contact, there arises some kind of pleasure. Now, sense gratification means that when that pleasure arises, I get into it. I wrap myself around it. I think, now I am the enjoyer. Well, because just the feeling of pleasure is not yet sense gratification. Sense gratification means one takes possession of that feeling of pleasure and makes it one's self. And thinks, I am the enjoyer. This is now I am enjoying this, now I am enjoying that. And then of course from that, then one has to become the controller. One enjoys that, or takes delight in that feeling of pleasure. It takes delight in it, and then your happiness depends upon the course of material nature. What we identify as our good, depends on perpetuating and increasing those pleasures which arise from the contact between the senses and their objects. Every time we do that, we increase our false ego. It gets heavier and heavier, layer upon layer upon layer. It's like putting in more and more rivets between ourselves and the material body. Now Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, that's why he says, it's in the fifth chapter, yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yona evate. There's a very, very revealing line. He says, those pleasures that arise from the contact between the senses and the object, the samsparsha ja, the contact between the senses and the object. Samsparsha ja bhoga, it's admitted that they're pleasures, bhoga, which we enjoy, He says those pleasures which arise from the contact between the senses and the object are in fact the source of all suffering. Dukkha yonaya evate. He's very emphatic. Yehi, he is an emphatic word. Yehi samsparsaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. They are really what causes suffering. So here Krishna gives us a clue as to the nature of the material world. This is why material life is called Maya. In Maya, we think that those pleasures are in fact the source of all happiness. But Krishna says they are in fact the source of all suffering. He says, therefore, those who are wise, they don't take any delight in them. So why are they the cause of our suffering? These innocent little pleasures. Instinctively, you know, it feels good. You put food in your mouth, it tastes good, you enjoy it. You want to repeat the experience. You hear some sweet sounds, you want to go back for more, and so on. You see something beautiful, you want to look twice. It's natural. Yet it's the cause of all our suffering. Why is it? Because it causes us to identify ourselves with the material body. That's the problem. And therefore the price we pay for enjoying in the material world is death. This is Prabhupada's statement. He says, death is an illusion we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. I mean, that's a pretty high price. So long, Maharaj. Hare Bol. Is it worth it? It certainly, at least our judgment, is not worth it. That not just death, not just one death either, but many, many deaths. Mrityu samsara, the cycle of repeated birth and death in the material world. That's what this so-called enjoyment causes us. Plus the fact of the matter is, we can't even enjoy it while we're enjoying it. Because these pleasures have a beginning and an end. As soon as we want to enjoy in the material world, we have to start to try to control material nature. We have to bring together our senses and the objects. But unfortunately, the senses and their objects have a tendency to get separated all the time. And so now we have to start to try to control material nature to keep them together. I've got a certain relationship with somebody, now I have to maintain that relationship. But those relationships are always breaking up. I've got relationships by which I get money. Now I'm always in anxiety. Is that going to stay? Boys and girls get together and form a relationship, but now they're always in anxiety. Will she go off with somebody else? It's nervousness all the time. All our happiness depends upon all these arrangements of material nature. And now we have to control them. If the other party gets in the government, they're going to pass tax laws, you know, it's going to wipe me out. I have to try to control the government, get into politics. Everything gets very, very complicated. And, of course, the more we enjoy, the more anxiety it is, the more we have to lose. So we can't even enjoy it. We get more and more nervous. So now we're rich and we have everything we want, and somehow or other it's all like paste from my mouth, like dirt. Does nothing taste good anymore? All I've got's an ulcer. And I'm taking Prozac and so many other things just to stay sane. This is what happens. So you get it, and then you can't. All Prabhupada said this, that all we really get in the material world is a little mental happiness. Oh, I have a nice house. I have a nice family. I have an important position. That's it. This is where this Brahma is. That's all that there is, you know. So it's not really a very good deal for us. It is not really happiness. It's a kind of counterfeit happiness. We call it happiness, but it doesn't really satisfy us. People are not getting satisfied. So therefore, one finally, after a sufficient experience, understands that there is no happiness possible in this material world. One should be fixed in this conclusion, and therefore I should be making plans to get out. Prabhupada said we should make arrangement that this is our last birth in this material world, so we should be making our plans. How am I going to get out? That's the project of self-realization.